Witness history at Roland Garros, where old rivalries meet new talent on the clay battleground. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled access as the world's top players in tennis face off to see if the veterans maintain their dominance or if a fresh face rises to challenge them. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens. The semifinals are set down under. Welcome to TC Live as we entertain you for the next hour leading up to all the action in Melbourne. From teenagers to the oldest world number one, this tournament is given all the feels as we head toward championship weekend. Here's the top stories of the day. After faltering on the verge of victory, how Alexander Zverev kept his composure to secure one of the biggest wins of his life, what that means heading into the semis. Plus, it's the final before the final. In a rematch from the U.S. Open, our experts on why whoever wins between Coco Gauff and Aryna Sabalenka will be favored to take the trophy. Rafa Nadal could be coming back sooner than expected. We'll tell you when and where he'll be making his return to the court. With 2 weeks of overnights, we're feeling like Medvedev. Just want to sleep now. But it's time to wake up for TC Live. Taking a look at today's featured matches, it is the women's semifinals on a Thursday in Australia, hump day here in the States. So who will get over the proverbial hump? Coco Gauff and Aryna Sabalenka first up in the night session. Rematch from that U.S. Open final last year that Gauff won. And then it is Diana Yastremska and Zhang Qinwen, both making their major semifinal debuts. We are guaranteed a first-time finalist in the Australian Open. Cannot wait to see those matches later today. Welcome to the show, Steve Weissman, Martina Navratilova, Lindsay Davenport, John Wertheim with you here. A lot to get to, a lot to break down. Martina, number one thing on your mind today.
Well, obviously the Sabalenka Gauff match, but I'm also curious to see how Zhang Qinwen and Diana Yastremska handled this situation. Neither have been there before, and they have to do it back to back. They both played yesterday, with Zhang having the more difficult match. So we'll see who can handle the nerves better and who's got a better game plan. But it'll come down to nerves, I think, and execution more than anything else.
You know, at the U.S. Open in 2021, we saw something we had never seen. We saw a player come through qualifying, then win another 7 matches for a total of 10 to win a Grand Slam title in Emma Raducanu. Steve, Diana Yastremska, 2 matches away from equaling that. We didn't think we'd see it again, certainly not so soon, but the way she's playing, gosh, she's looked so good throughout this tournament.
8/10 of the way to a Raducanu. Martina, you are a football fan, so perhaps you'll remember that Brett Favre had one of the best games of his NFL career the same weekend his father died. Why do I bring that up? Because I think sometimes we forget athletes have remarkable abilities to compartmentalize. And Alexander Zverev is facing some very serious allegations. One of them is a domestic violence charge against a former partner, the mother of his child. There'll be a formal hearing in May. Meanwhile, that has not impacted his tennis at all. Whatever's going on in his life, whatever cloud may hang over his ascent, he has blocked that out and, to his credit, played some really good tennis.
He has played great tennis, and it is semifinal day. There is a junior boy in the doubles in semifinals today, Jagger Leach as well, so that's what I'm looking forward to later today. Fourth on big court, 1573. They're in an arena today, so we'll talk about that.
Thank you.
Let's get to the action from last night. We had one of the game's best servers playing one of the game's best returners, Martina. Daniil Medvedev, Hubie Hurkacz, it would go back and forth.
It went back and forth, certainly. Medvedev got the upper hand in the third set after they split the first two. Hurkacz was serving pretty well, this time he goes down, but he loses the set 3. But Hurkacz comes back, kept coming to the net, winning most of the points there. Gets the break here and serves it out. And Hurkacz looked really, really sharp and fresh, whereas Medvedev looked like he was on his last legs. But the shadow comes in, things cool down, and Medvedev got hot again and gets the break here to go up the break in the fifth and ends up winning the match when Hurkacz really dominated in every aspect of the game, even won 8 more points for the match than Medvedev. But what counts in tennis how you played the big points, and Medvedev really played those big points so much better than Herbert who crushed yesterday. All he gets is to his box there.
Kisses to your exes. Take a look at this, because this is exactly what Martina was talking about. If you look at the numbers, you would think that Hurkacz won. He had more aces, higher percentage of points won on first and second serve, more points won at net, more breaks. Martina said it, 8 more points overall. Alas, that is the sport of tennis. Let's hear from the winner.
Ooh, tough. I knew how Hubi can play, and in my opinion, he played quite well today. I felt like the games, almost all of them, probably except the 2-0 in the first set, I felt like every game I had a small chance. I managed to take it. So really, really happy and proud about that because, yeah, with him you don't get many chances. Tough matchup, but that makes me even happier to win and be in the semis.
So the other day we were talking about Medvedev and Jim Courier and how far back he was returning. That was a little bit of gamesmanship there, huh?
I absolutely loved it from Medvedev. I mean, that interview with Jim got so much recognition, and he talked about how he stood, you know, 15 feet behind the baseline and how much farther, but how good he returned from there. So what did Medvedev do? The very first game, he went and stood on the baseline to return. And what did he do? He broke serve. Yeah. Hubi was rattled. He didn't know what to do. But I love that about Medvedev. Yeah. He admitted it also. He does a lot of things out there. I've seen him kind of fake his toss and serve around. He'll do whatever it takes to win. But, I mean, how gutsy is that? Quarterfinals? Okay, I haven't stood here in probably a couple years. But this guy knows and thinks that I stand so far back. So I'm going to mess with him in a big match. He did. And pretty funny to watch that play out in the beginning.
That was one of the all-time great sandbags. We were joking about that. I think, you know, with that match show that we talked about in the stats we saw, but I think that makes tennis special. It's a lot about the when, and it's great to break serve, but if you can't then hold your serve, it's for naught. It's great to win more points than your opponent, but if they don't come at the right time, you don't necessarily win the match. I think we forget sometimes, you know, Medvedev for all the for all the antics and for all the times he makes us laugh, this is a proper player. This, you know, he could be playing in his third Australian Open final in the last 4 years. And I think that for all the clowning and the good interviews, he was the tougher player too yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers tell the story about 99% of the time, but this was one of those matches where it didn't. And as Medvedev said, he played whenever he had chances, he took advantage of them. And he's a thinker out there. You can see it, how smart he is in his interviews. And you can see it how he plays. His tennis IQ is off the charts. He can serve and volley if he has to, even though that's not his game. Whatever it takes to win, maybe a little bit underhanded sometimes, but overall, really a good sport. And he can do plan D, plan E, whatever it takes. That's what he'll do.
And he needed it. It looks like his legs were gone after four sets. And then somehow, some way.
We said that earlier in the tournament, though. Yeah, he's fine every time.
It looks like his legs were gone after the second set. Yeah. He took this long break, and you said, oh, boy, what's he doing? And then he comes back, and he's good as new. He's a lot of fun, isn't he?
He certainly is. And he is in the Final Four once again at the Australian Open. Meantime, Carlos Alcaraz, Sasha Zverev playing the night session. Lindsay, they have split their previous two meetings in majors.
Yeah, one of the best sets that Sasha Zverev has ever played in such a big match was this opening set. He absolutely cruised through this set. He lost a total of 2 points in his service games. What a masterclass he did of serving. Served for the match at 85%. Up 2 sets to love and 5-2, then got a little tight. And Carlos started to find his way back into this match. He was able to get the crowd back involved. Zverev served for the match, faltered a bit. And Carlos, credit to him for not giving up. It's not easy when you're down 2 sets to love and a break. But he got the crowd going again and able to steal this third set. And you think, okay, Zverev going to go away here. Really big opportunity. We talk a lot about that U.S. Open final he lost. A lot of credit to Zverev, who just hunkered down here in this ninth game. Able to get the break. Didn't get too excited. Knew he had to go back out and serve it out. And serve it out he did. A great first serve. And he is through.
For the first time in 11 attempts, Zverev takes out a top five player at a major. Now 2 wins away from his first Grand Slam title. Take a look at these numbers. As Lindsay said, made a staggering 85% of his first serves, won nearly 75% of those points, a positive 28-25 winners to unforced errors ratio, plus 7 breaks and 10 chances. Zverev with Jim Courier after.
he'll have an opportunity to take on another very tall, talented player like yourself and Daniil Medvedev. You guys have played a lot, but this will be your first time playing in best of five and in a major. What do you expect from that match?
Yeah, he's been kicking my ass a lot over the last year or so. But maybe this will be it. This will be the place. I mean, I don't know.
Martina Zverev also said, when you're so close to winning, your brain starts going, and it's not always helpful. And that's what happened to him when he was up 2 sets and 5-2. What's that like for a player on the court?
Well, it really should have been 3 straight sets. And usually what goes on Zverev is his serve, but this time it was his forehand that let him down. Also, the weaker of the two wings. If I was anybody, I would never go to his backhand on big points. But he put it together. But after he lost that third set, he did not fall apart. And his serve is just outstanding. Lindsay and I were talking about this. What happened? Because he would get the yips on his serve. Now there's no trace of him ever having had the yips. We'll see if they ever show up again. But right now, he's rock solid in every department, except when he had to close it out. But then he jumped right back in the fourth set.
Yeah, we see with Sabalenka, too. I mean, the yips for some athletes are absolute career ruiners. So for him to come out and serve like that is really quite something. I think we'd be remiss in not mentioning Breakpoint, Netflix. The great drama is Medvedev and Zverev. Who would have thought in the first major we get? I do think we should spend 10 seconds on Carlos Alcaraz.
Absolutely.
Not here with Juan Carlos Ferrero. Kind of showed. I thought that was a very strange performance. He looked unsure of himself. I wasn't sure there was much in the way of tactics. We know what the head-to-head was. We know Zverev had beaten him before, even at majors. But I thought that was a pretty vacant performance from a guy who's won 2 of the last 5 majors.
Yeah, it's interesting. Obviously, the Wimbledon final, just an amazing match from Alcaraz. I don't know if it's that Cincinnati final that he lost in a couple of hours to Djokovic where he had chances. Hasn't been to a final since then. It's a pretty long stretch for a player at number one who's won 2 majors, and he's just seemed a little bit flat. So sometimes for a player, all of a sudden being one of the most famous players and so much expected, maybe it's just hit him a little bit since last summer, and we'll see. Listen, he's not going anywhere. Yeah. He's going to be back. It's just one of these tournaments where wasn't quite ready to go. We talk so much, no lead-in tournaments, played late into the season, played some exos in the offseason. First year ever making a run in Australia.
Yeah.
Let's see next year if he does it a little differently.
I think perhaps. I mean, he's still 20 years old, and this is his deepest run ever at the Australian Open. So I don't worry about Carlitos certainly going forward. We will break down that Medvedev-Zverev match with Jim Courier later. So much to get to. For who? My country. For what to win, qualifier Diana Yastremska continuing her historic run, plus a revenge match on the doubles court, pitting former major champion partners against one another. Who got the last laugh? It's reality TV at its finest. We're spilling the tea on TC Live.
TC Live at the Australian Open is brought to you in part by Bet365, the world's favorite sportsbook. By Tennis Express, we deliver tennis right to your front door. Order today, ships today. And by National Car Rental. Go National, go like a pro.
Witness history at Roland Garros, where old rivalries meet new talent on the clay battleground. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled access as the world's top players in tennis face off to see if the veterans maintain their dominance or if a fresh face rises to challenge them. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Martina, Lindsay, John, Steve back with you. A reminder, TC Live comes your way 5 p.m. Eastern every day to get you ready for the action down under. And then it is Tennis Channel's Encore coverage with Brett Haber and Paul Anacone. You do not want to miss that Thursday, 8 a.m. Eastern. Well, for the first time in more than 30 years, we had two players ranked 50 or higher meeting in the women's quarterfinals in Melbourne. Qualifier Diana Yastremska and the teenager Linda Noskova, Martina.
Yeah, I think Noskova was a bit not sharp because that match against Svitolina that only won 3 games, I think she had too long in between matches. She has been dictating in her previous matches, but this time it was Yastremska who was more aggressive, dictating from the baseline, attacking Noskova much better, and those down the lines were paying off both on the forehand and the backhand, and she wins the first set 6-3. She gets the break here in the second. Noskova hung in there, but Yastremska was down the line. So Noskova cheating a little too much cross court, and Yastremska in the end comes away with a fairly simple win. It's her first semifinal qualifier. Well done.
Three times the winners, broke three times, eight straight wins from qualifying. That is her first major semifinal, and she is soaking it all in. The first qualifier to reach the women's semis here since 1978. Of course, Emma Raducanu won it all 3 years ago in New York. Alexander Stevenson had that run at Wimbledon in 1999, and Podorowska at Roland Garros. Let's hear from the latest member adding on to this list.
As I said on court, it's nice to make a history. It's something new for me and for my generation because the last time it happened, it was a long time ago. I wasn't born yet. I wasn't really putting the goal, you know, to go quarters, fourth round or semis or whatever. I was just trying to enjoy playing here.
How about that? She is like on that. Target. Started the tournament 93 in the world. She is now up to 29. Every player she's beaten in the main draw has been top 50, including two major champions, Lindsay. This is what dreams are made of.
It really is. And, you know, Yastremska's had a very, very difficult road up and down. She was a couple of years ago heading towards the top of women's tennis, a lot of major setbacks. To see her come back and fight through all of this, and especially given what's going on in her homeland, it's been a really a nightmare for her the last couple of years. To see it all kind of come together, she's had to fight her way through to this semifinal. But you always knew she had that talent. And to see it all kind of play out. And also, by the way, no lapses yet.
Yeah.
And I thought Noskova would have the edge and that it would be Yastremska who would falter, maybe just out of pure exhaustion. The complete opposite happened. And we'll see, back-to-back days. We'll see if it helps her where she doesn't have a lot of time to think about, okay, I'm playing a Grand Slam semi, or if she's really going to miss that rest day.
Everybody knew she had this talent, including Serena Williams. You tweeted out an article yesterday about when they played at the Australian Open in 2019.
Yes, Serena beat her, but then she saw the opponent was crying, and it really was poignant to Serena to say, look, this girl thought she could beat me, and I respect that. I mean, I do think we showed that board with the qualifiers. I mean, this is a player who was 19 years old and was 21 in the world. So it's not as though, oh, this, I can't believe, where is this coming from? I mean, I think if anything, she's, yeah, this is where I belong, and now it's good to be getting there. I do think, and Martina joined in here, I do think we ought to pause when we talk about compartmentalization. I mean, this is someone who was living in a car for a while 2 years ago, a Ukrainian player. Her village was absolutely decimated. And I think sometimes it's been 2 years now since the invasion, and we've sort of glossed it over, but I do think she's playing with a lot of onus there and doing very well.
Look, when she had to escape basically on a boat to Romania when the war broke out, in perspective, so, and taking care of her younger sister, so everything that she's been through, she's not going to falter mentally or emotionally because she's been through too much to get here. And also, I think playing for their country, making their people feel better, I think it's a plus for most of the Ukrainians. They've been playing better tennis because they just will not give up. They have too much responsibility on their shoulder, but they embrace it rather than being scared from it. So I expect her to not have a meltdown or a letdown emotionally. I think she'll keep going.
Yeah, I'll never forget talking to her a few years ago at Indian Wells on our desk about how her and her sister had to leave the mom at the river and go and not see them for another year and not be in contact, not know what was happening, whether her parents were alive or not. So definitely had to grow up quickly, and here she is, best tennis of her life. Really special to see for Diana Yastremska. Who will she face in the next round? Well, it's going to be a first timer, Zheng Jinwen, second woman from China to make back-to-back Grand Slam quarterfinals, but lost her only previous match, Lens, to Anna Kalinskaya.
Yeah, and Anna Kalinskaya was absolutely superb in the first set, Steve. As you said the other day, she goes, yeah, I expect to be here. Well, she played like it, won the first set, and a real chance to get through to a semi, but real credit to Zhang, who had 3-all in the second set. Something clicked. Started to find her range on her ground stroke, started to dictate play more. She served well in this match, had 10 aces, able to take the second set. Kalinskaya would win the first game of the third set. Then it was all Zhang, who just went on a roll. 6 games in a row, 11 of 12 at net, broke serve 6 times. And Steve, there's a lot of pressure on her in this match. Met her idol, Li Na, a couple of days ago. She won this match. She's in a Grand Slam semi. She's also into the top 10. A humongous accomplishment for her.
Won 10 of the last 11 games of the match. Just the third Chinese major semifinalist in history. Finished with 10 aces, 42 winners. Only lost 10 points on her serve in the second and third sets. The unforced error is mounted for Kalinskaya. And Queen Nguyen now guaranteed that bit of tennis royalty. Top 10 next week. Special stuff for her. What started as a teenage wasteland has become one teen queen. So where does Coco Gauff rank among the greatest youngsters in women's tennis history? Find out next. Welcome back to TC Live as we lead you up to first ball in Melbourne. For all the latest news, make tennis.com your online information source throughout the Australian Open and the entire season. Peter Bodo has more on surprise semifinalist Diana Yastremska. And Zachary Cohen has your pick of the day in Betting Central. Download the tennis app or visit the website. It is now time for the daily forecast with Fox Weather.
Good day, tennis fans. I'm Fox Weather meteorologist Stephen Morgan. Here's today's Australian Open forecast. A mix of sun and clouds. Out in Melbourne, temperatures going to be on the cooler side, but still comfortable. Sitting at about 71 degrees. Not a bad day. Remember, you can download the Fox Weather app or stream Fox Weather from your favorite connected TV device.
Cool and comfortable. That's what we like to hear. It was just 4 months ago that Coco Gauff came back from a set down to defeat Aryna Sabalenka and win the U.S. Open, taking her first major title with all the feels. Coco became the youngest American to win the U.S. Open since Serena Williams in 1999. Take a look at this list of teen queens. Coco could be the first American to win multiple majors as a teenager since our own Tracy Austin did it. She would also pass Jennifer Capriati for the most major wins overall among American teens. So, Martina, when you take a look at this list of historical players and what they were able to accomplish as teenagers, what goes through your mind?
I'm just trying to figure out, had I had that help with the coaching, et cetera, could I have been there mentally? I'm not so sure. No matter how much help you get, you have to be ready for it yourself. And so these teenage phenoms, that's what they are. They're phenoms, but so more power to them. But particularly Tracy Austin and Martina Hingis, who just did so much at such an early age. But still, it's more difficult these days, but teenagers are still in there. So, yeah, kudos to Coco and her parents.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. I mean, obviously, they're so special. I mean, I have children that age and kind of giggle. Like, there's no chance they could handle being out there playing in front of all those people, the pressure, everything that goes along with it. Then you start playing for really big stakes. It's not only Grand Slam title. It's the prize money. It's dealing with the press. It's dealing with packed stadiums every single time you walk out there, dealing with expectations. Certainly, Gauff has had an awful lot of expectations on her since she was 15 years old and beat Venus at Wimbledon. So how these young ladies handle it as well as they're going through it, it is pretty remarkable when you watch it from the outside.
Yeah, you bring up the fact that we saw her as a 15-year-old at Wimbledon. How have you seen her mature from those days as a young teenager to now almost 20 years old?
She's almost the outlier Coco in this whole group, and all of these players were remarkable. But I just, in my generation, I've never seen anyone handle it as well as she has, but also her parents, because a lot of times with phenoms, you get parents that are incredibly pushy. Unfortunately, sometimes we've had abusive parents, which is the absolute worst. And you never get that sense with the Gauff family. She is so incredibly happy and well-spoken and ready for this moment. I'm not sure how, as parents, you get someone so young ready at such a young age, but they've managed to do that. And you know what? She looks like she loves it. She would rather be nowhere else. And that's such a change sometimes, Martina. We see some of the teens, when they get to 18 or 19, they look like they almost hate it out there.
I know. My kid, the older one, said, oh, I love tennis, but half the time she wasn't in it mentally. And even though she said she liked it, she was not doing everything she possibly could. And that's okay. You know, not very many have that kind of mentality, especially this day with all the distractions and the attention span, you know, is that of a hummingbird for most teenagers, or it just changes. You know, they have it for a day and then they go somewhere else completely. So to have this kind of commitment and focus and discipline, day in and day out, this day and age, commendable.
Having a short memory could be a good thing, in the sport of tennis at least. But Coco Gauff said, you know, winning the U.S. Open really freed her up because now she knows she's a major champion at 19, can just do more and more. Two more wins, and she adds her second major as a teenager, gets Aryna Sabalenka later today. And it's a wide-open draw in the top half with Zhang and Yastremska. But specifically on Coco Gauff, I mean, what would be your advice to her taking the court today?
I think she's ready for this moment. I mean, she proved to us last summer that she was ready to handle it. The challenge will be the level of play. She hasn't played anyone in the top 25 yet this year, so a big jump up for her to play Sabalenka. They have played many times before. Obviously, Coco won the big one in the final of the U.S. Open. So the X's and O's, Coco's got down pat. Just wonder if at the beginning part of the match, maybe it takes her a little bit of time to maybe get used to that pace, or just get used to the quality of the Sabalenka shots.
What would you tell her, Martina?
Remember the US Open, remember what worked, and try that first. And if that doesn't, then you change it. But most of all, you know, you have a winning record. Forget that you haven't played that well. You know you have to play better, but you can only play as well as your opponent also. So she kind of, one reason she hadn't been tested was because she hadn't played good enough players to be tested until Kostyuk, really. And so I would just tell her, appreciate it, enjoy it. It's the semifinals of the Australian Open, just another match. Mm-hmm. You know what to do. You've done it before. And then go into the X's and O's. But mentally, I just say, just relax and enjoy it as much as you can. There's such a fine line between being relaxed and being focused. So it's a balancing act all the way through. And you're going to have ups and downs, but just try to stay centered.
That's great advice. It's what you told your son. Enjoy it while he's out there. I mean, it's perfect. By the way, what Coco says, look good, feel good. Step out looking good. She's going to feel good out there. We'll see what happens later today. Coco Gauff and Aryna Sabalenka still to come. Jim Courier joins us from Melbourne to talk about the men's semifinals and a huge win for that guy, Alexander Zverev. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back. Last night, Alexander Zverev put on a show. Was a game away from one of the most dominating wins ever over Carlos Alcaraz, and then hung on to take out the two seed, get back to the Australian Open semifinals for the second time. After the match, he caught up with our Jim Courier.
Give us an overall assessment on what's going on with your body right now.
I feel fine.
No, we're not going to play this game. Not going to play this game. Novak played that with me last year. Come on. I mean, are you dealing with blisters? What's going on with the feet?
Yeah, I have a lot of blood under my toenails, so that's quite painful. I take them out every single match, but then obviously when you play and when you run a lot, they come back. Just had to retape it, but you know what? I would much rather feel the way I'm feeling right now, with maybe a bit of pain here and there, and be in the semifinals than be at home right now and watch this tournament. So,
the magic of TV. Jim Courier will be on your screen momentarily. Take a look at the draw. It is Zverev Medvedev for the 19th time, and then Djokovic Sinner at the top. Talk about some good matches and guaranteed to have a good final either way. There is our Hall of Famer, Jim Courier. Good morning to you, Jim, out there.
I'm a time traveler. It's Thursday where I am. How's everybody doing?
You're in the future. So, man, what's the future like?
Future's fantastic. It's nice and pleasant today. There's a big excitement about not only what the men's semifinal has in store, but tonight with the women's semifinal, the rematch of the U.S. Open. I'm sure you guys have gone over that in detail, but there's a lot of buzz here at the tournament. So, this is kind of the calm before the storm. It's quiet here this morning. Not a lot of matches going on early. So, it's a good time to be in Melbourne. Sorry you guys aren't with us.
What do you make of what you saw from Zverev last night?
Well, it was a huge effort, especially once you're up two sets to love and serving for a match. All of a sudden, you find yourself in a four set. Your mind starts automatically going, oh, I should have been in the locker room. Oh, now we're going five. He was rock solid at being able to reset, and that was the most impressive thing to me. Alcaraz was able to raise his level. Zverev never showed any real, like, frustration or craziness, and he was able to then pull it back together to win in four.
I mean, keep in mind, Zverev was 2 points from defeat to Lucas Klein, a qualifier, and then he goes out and plays the second seed, plays Alcaraz, and plays at that level. Jim, I'm curious, being there, How much of this is Zverev? We talked about his serve earlier. How much of this was Alcaraz just what I thought was a bit of a vacant performance? What do you see this breaking down?
Well, let's start with Sasha, because Sasha's serve was phenomenal, and often is. He served 70% in the tournament en route to this round. He was at 85% first serves made. So he held on to his biggest strength, which is the serve. But what was surprising for him in the best possible way was for two and a half sets, nearly three sets, he was the dominant baseline player. He stood closer to the baseline than he normally does by about 2 or 3 feet. He hit his forehand a lot bigger and a lot more down the line than he usually does. And I think that aggression really unsettled Alcaraz, who started slowly and never really got going. This is a learning moment for Alcaraz, though. The thing that has kept the Federers and the Nadals and the Djokovic's viable for so long and kept them away from upsets for so long is the many, many ways that they know how to win. If they're having a bad offensive night, which Alcaraz was last night, they rely on their defense. They know how to pull back on the throttle. Alcaraz doesn't have that governor yet. He's all throttle. And once Zverev got tight and he started backing up and reverting to normal form, leaving the ball short, Alcaraz could display all of his assets, but he didn't. He was handed that opportunity by Sasha's nerves. He didn't take it. And that, for me, is the big learning moment here. And we were saying in commentary last night, this is the match where it became evident how important it is to have Juan Carlos Ferreira's input in match, you know, because the on-court coaching at that point could have maybe given him a little more guidance as to how to manage a situation that he just simply didn't know how to do. Last year, he had to learn how to figure out cramps. This one, for me, is a very teachable moment for him. But ultimately, it was Sasha's moment, because Sasha came out and rattled him early on. And then once Sasha's ghost reappeared, he somehow, you know, got the Ghostbusters in and banished him at the very end.
John brought up the point about Juan Carlos Ferro not being there earlier in the show as well, Jim. And you had mentioned yesterday, Sasha Zverev needed to serve well. I mean, he did that and then some, as we saw. I mean, 85%, that's obscene. If he does that, can anyone beat him in this tournament?
Well, it depends on where he hits them, because he was the first 2.5 sets, he was 85% and hitting his spots, and it was very difficult for Alcaraz, who doesn't have the wingspan of some of the other opponents remaining in the draw, to cover the corners of the court. But as the match wore on, the accuracy diminished, and Alcaraz was able to get more balls back in play. He just wasn't able to kind of hold up his end of the bargain once he was in the neutral rallies. Look, there were a lot of highlights here. There was a lot of good court coverage. There was a lot of drama. I mean, every one of us in the stadium, save Sasha's family, thought this was going 5 sets. Frankly, you know, we thought Alcaraz, once he won that third set breaker, there's no way that Zverev's going to be able to turn this around. And yet he hung in there. To John's point, he didn't get down on himself. He just kept plodding along. I mean, maybe because he was dealing with the foot problems. It sounds terrible to have blood pooling underneath your toes and have to get that drained on a daily basis. But sometimes having a liability like that, it forces you not to spend energy in other places. So, look, this is a big one for him. You know, 12 months ago, he was not the player that he is today. We all know that he's got a lot of clouds swirling around outside of the court. But inside the court, he kept it all together today.
So it sets this up, our Tennis Express head-to-head. We have seen it 18 times before. Medvedev leads 11-7 overall. And last year was 5-1 against Alexander Zverev. Lindsay, what do you think of this matchup and how it plays out in Melbourne?
Well, so close between these two. But physically, it'll be a challenge for both of these two to recover, to be able to play again on Friday down in Australia. But it all depends on Zverev, as Jim was saying there. Is he willing? Got to figure out a way to end the points against Medvedev. Is he willing to step up and really take advantage of those opportunities? He prefers to be behind the baseline making balls. Well, that's Medvedev's specialty, right? He's the best at the business in that. So how does Zverev kind of get out of that pattern? What can he do different and special? As Jim said, he was willing to change his tactics against Alcaraz. Is he willing to do that against Medvedev, who was a much better retriever than Alcaraz? Alcaraz plays better offense. Medvedev, one of the best defenders out there.
That return position, I'm sure Jim has some thoughts about what we saw last night and where Medvedev is going to stand against such a big server. I just want to go back to one thing Jim said. I mean, a year ago at this event, Zverev lost to Michael Moe, who's a nice young American player, but Michael Moe didn't qualify this year. That should tell you something about the momentum and the momentousness of this comeback. This is one of the great injury comebacks that I've seen in a long time. And just say what you will about Zverev, for him to be in the Final Four, beating a guy like Alcaraz in the quarters, I think we ought to give him some credit there.
Jim, I do want to get your thoughts on Medvedev sandbagging you the other night and giving you all the masterclass on being so far back. And then first game against Hubie, he's right on the baseline.
Yeah, I thought it was really fascinating, his answer he gave to John McEnroe in the post-match interview, that Hurkacz's serve is unlike others that he faces, and that it bounces and is still rising. Because what he relies on with that deep position is he wants to hit a normal ground stroke when the ball is descending, but he didn't feel like he could do that against Hurkacz, so he needed to take the bounce on. And he admitted in his masterclass that he's not that great, and he's not that comfortable up there, but Hurkacz has the serve to make him do that. Will Zverev's serve force him to feel that way? What's different about Zverev's serve? Maybe I'll get a Hawkeye laser and actually compare them. I'm sure I'll need to do that for a Channel 9 here and see where that ball is, because the record that he has against Zverev is very, very good, Medvedev. I expect him to be where he normally returns from, and we'll do a deep dive on where that is too, so we know in advance. But, you know, the good news with Medvedev is he's never boring. He always gives you something to think about and talk about. I'm fascinated by him.
Well, I'm fascinated to hear what the results of that deep dive is going to bring for tomorrow's Tennis Channel Live. So looking forward to that. Much more still to get here on the show as we lead you up to all the action in Melbourne today. That's the women's semifinals. But up next, it's our doubles report. It's got it all, from Czech drama to some incredible history on the men's side. You don't want to miss any of it. Welcome back to TC Live. A reminder, second major, not too far away. This spring, Tennis Channel once again will bring you extensive daily live coverage from Roland Garros. Don't miss any of the Grand Slam excitement on the Terre Battue in Paris beginning Sunday, May 26. All right, it's time for our often imitated, never duplicated, world-famous doubles segment. Lindsay, this is the match. With all the tea, Barbora Krejcikova, Katerina Siniakova, seven majors, Olympic gold together. They broke up this year. New partners playing against each other.
Yeah, so tough for these two to play against each other. Steve, they also go back to the juniors, won junior slams together. And it was Krejcikova and Sigmund in the first set who were just a little bit more comfortable out there. Storm Hunter and Siniakova had the advantage of the crowd support, and they needed it, especially when the second set got tight. They were able to pull through. They get the crucial break to give themselves a chance to serve for the set, and they're able to push this to a third. Krejcikova and Sigmund would get up 4-1 and a point to go up 5-1 in the third. And that's right when the wheels came off for them. That miss there by Sigmund then allowed Hunter and Siniakova to serve for the match, and they're able to close it out. Storm Hunter, the Aussie, still in the doubles.
Yes, she is number one in the world. Look at the handshake. That was quick for Barb. That was quick.
Can I borrow a blanket?
Siniakova, she gets the check mark for the first one. Take a look at the draw right now. It's a good one. We got the Kichenok-Ostapenko matchup against Dabrowski-Routliff, and then Hunter Siniakova taking on Shea, who's still in it with Mertens. All seeds going on in the women's double semifinals. On the men's side, history on the line. Rohan Bopanna can get to number one in the world if he and Matt Ebden can get past Maximo Gonzalez and Andres Molteni, John.
You know what they say, cover half the court and you get to play twice as long. They don't really say that. But in the orange, it's all about Rohan Bopanna here. This is one of the real sort of classy veterans, 43 years old, with Australian Matty Ebden against the Argentine team. Look at that reflex. This actually was a really fun match, apart from the history of play. As we do, we like to do the stats. 18 winners and 3 unforced errors. Look at that. That's a nice way to set up history and match point here. 6-4. Look at that. Getting the crowd. He knows what's on the line. Here's match point coming up here for the team. Look at this. You're charging the net. It's only fitting that Rohan would have the winning volley. History. First time he's ever been number one. 33 years old. Congrats to him.
King of the Hill, top of the heap. Oldest man to reach world number one in doubles history. Joined Sanya Mirza, Leander Paes and Mahesh Bhupathi as players from India to reach number one as we take a look at the men's doubles draw. But the biggest story is the man with the salt and pepper hair, Rohan Bopanna. Jim, forget the 30 under 30, the 40 under 40. You can do anything at any time in life. Talk about the inspiration that Rohan Bopanna is.
It's fantastic. And you know, India will get behind Rohan. They will bend behind him for sure. But there are lots of tennis fans over there that follow players like Sonia Mirza and her success in doubles as well. So this will be a huge story there. And it is inspiring. You know, this is a guy that puts in the work. Here, you know, he's salt and pepper beard, but he's in there carving it up every day, doing what he can to stay with it. And, you know, reflexes are required. If when you're 43 years old, you're not going to be as quick with your feet, but good news in doubles, half the court, but you've got to have fast hands. And there's no question he does. So good for him. This is an awesome little story. And, you know, doubles doesn't often get a lot of big news, but I bet you in India it is today.
Bopes, thanks for making us believe that anything's possible. We love to see that. Still to come, our Bet365 match preview has the odds on Novak Djokovic and Jannik Sinner. We'll tell you how each player can make history for their country and more. Stay with us. Welcome back. Don't miss a new series on T2. It is Good Trouble with Nick Kyrgios, featuring the Aussie star in conversations with top figures in sports, entertainment, and tennis. Guess what? The premiere episode is tonight, 7 Eastern. Nick sits down with Chef Gordon Ramsay. It is streaming on T2. You don't want to miss it. Time for our Bet365 match preview. The odds on Novak Djokovic and Jannik Sinner. Novak is the favorite. You got to put up $225 to win $100. If you put $100 on Jannik Sinner, you can win $175. He certainly has a chance. He's won 2 of their last 3 meetings, Jim Courier. However, never in 3 out of 5. Break this one down for us.
Yeah, look, first of all, the good news for Novak, he was hurting against Taylor Fritz. He survived that hot day. There are no more hot days ahead of this tournament, and he gets 2 days off. Jannik Sinner certainly has been the man in form. He's played the best consistent men's tennis we've seen here at the Australian Open. He's going to be fresh, he's going to be ready, and he's going to be confident that he has a good game plan. The question is, can he hold that game plan through the course of best of 5 sets? And when they played 3 times in a span of about 2 weeks between the Tour Finals and the Davis Cup, a lot of these matches, they rest on Sinner's racket. He is, I keep saying this, he's got the Stan Wawrinka quality, the huge power on the forehand and the backhand, the much improved serve now with the step up motion. So he has the assets in place, but the one match that Novak beat him of those 3 in the finals of the Tour Finals, the unforced error count climbed. So that's going to be the key thing to look for. Can he hold on to it? We shall see. But this is amazing thinking about what this might be, because it just feels like this could be Sinner's moment. We'll see. Mm.
Yeah. Medvedev was asked, who do you want to play? And he was like, I don't know. I mean, Sinner hasn't dropped a set, and Djokovic is the GOAT.
But we know Medvedev. We know Medvedev's a sandbagger. Yes. So who knows? No, I mean, I do feel like this is really pivotal, right? Either this is Novak wins, he's never lost at a semi in Australia, and it's, again, this guy's superior, best of 5 changes everything. Whatever flurry happened in November, like, put that aside. This is where the big boys play, or we have a real changing of the guard. So I feel like there's a lot riding on this match. Do remember when they played at Wimbledon last year, Sinner really didn't offer a whole lot of resistance, and Novak won in straight sets. But this shows you how far Sinner's come. Not necessarily reflected in the odds. I think one thing we've noticed, even just on highlights, Sinner's length, when we think of Novak as pretty long and having reach and his footwork helps that, but boy, Sinner is just, he gets to everything defensively, even at the net. There's a lot to like and pick up on for this match.
Yeah, it was a big year for Sinner in improving almost every single aspect of his game. Some players will focus on one area. Jim talked about the serve, willing to change the motion, get that serve to be better. The ground strokes seem to be harder and seem to be more accurate, as John was saying, the movement as well. Gliding around the court, getting to balls, coming to net to finish points off. But he's playing a 10-time champion, yep. Steve. We got to see it to believe
it,
right?
Got to see it to believe it, yep. Until he does it.
Exactly.
Until he does it.
Exactly.
But when he does it, we'll give him props, that's for sure. Let's take a look at this. Rafa Nadal set to return in February in Doha. Jim, what was your reaction when you heard Rafa was coming back so soon?
Relief, exuberance, exhilaration, whatever those superlatives are. We all want to see Nadal sign off the way that he wants to sign off. It was discouraging to see him playing so well in Brisbane and then pull up with an injury in his 3rd match. So look, we wish Nadal the finish that he wants to his career, which obviously the big target is Roland Garros. This is all a big build up for that time. What network covers that?
I can't remember. I believe it's Tennis Channel. I believe we did a promotional about that earlier in the show.
yeah, you might be right. But I think this is a sigh of relief that it's this soon that he can come back to.
So, John, this basically means he's on the entry list, right? So until he shows up, we're not sure. What are your sources telling you?
Yeah, I heard. I mean, I asked about Las Vegas and said, like, for sure, don't worry about that. So I think this is a good sign. And I don't. This is not a camp that plays games. I mean, I think if he were not ready, he would not have put out that release. So again, we'll see. You're absolutely right. I mean, let's watch him play. Go ahead,
Jim.
Yeah.
What do you got?
What camps play games? Let's name names. What camps play games?
That's the T.
We save that for our next segment.
he had surgery on the hip, right? And then he's got pain in it in Brisbane. It's only natural that he was not ready for 3 out of 5. He was a little bit scared, wanted to make sure that area was okay. Obviously got back to Spain. Not really that bad. So really great sign, as Jim said, that he's entered into tournaments. He wants to and willing to go try and play. I hope we see him through the Olympics. I hope he's able to end, as Jim said, his career, not only at Roland Garros, but how about Roland Garros at the Olympic Games? That would be something.
Whenever he's playing, I just want him to be healthy, to keep playing, like not have starts and stops. But we'll see, hopefully in February. Behind the scenes, look who we got there. On the right, that's Jagger Leach playing in the boys juniors semifinals today. Who's next to him?
Yeah, his friend Cooper Wisdendyke, who's still in the boys singles as well. Two American boys in the quarterfinals of the juniors. Cooper and Kaylin Bagoon. We've got a couple of teams in the semis of the boys' doubles, a couple of girls' teams in the girls' doubles. But the juniors today, if you made it to the semis of doubles or the quarters of singles, you got to move from the NTC, which is on the grounds, over to Rod Laver Arena and be with the pros. So all the juniors ecstatic last night when they got new badges.
That's cool. So who is Jag seen? Is he texting to be like, oh, I saw Novak today? Or
no, I don't know. Okay. Not yet. I haven't heard.
I'm waiting for like Coco to come
around. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Not the last you'll see of Jagger Leach. Semifinals later tonight, 1573 Arena. It's a big day. Women's semifinals, Coco Gauff, Aryna Sabalenka, Diana Yastremska, Zhang Qingwen. Cannot wait for that. But before we get to the action on court, it's what you've been waiting for. John Wertheim, stat of the day.
I like that. Surfer music, the stat of the day music. Who is our DJ? Here's a radical one for you. Andre Rublev loses to Sinner, and what do we know? He goes to 0-10 in major quarterfinals. 10 quarterfinals, no semifinals. 0-10. What do you say for some consolation? What do you say to encourage a fine player? Well, you know who else has 10 defeats in major quarterfinals?
Who?
Novak Djokovic.
Okay.
Same number of defeats. Of course, he has won 48 quarterfinals.
Wow.
So I think what you say to Rublev is, look, anyone can lose 10 quarterfinals, win your next 48, and you're right even with Novak. No problem. Mm. Same number of quarterfinal defeats, but a couple more W's in Novak's column.
I love how you just turn it positive there.
Exactly.
It's not 0-10. It's 48-10.
That's same as Novak.
Got some opportunity.
Yeah, right.
Huge room for growth there. All right, Jim, it's time for your hot shot of the day. And as usual, comes from the guy that didn't win.
Yeah, this is Tennis Channel's version of the tortoise and the hare. You really don't want to win the hot shot of the day because it probably means you're going to lose the match. But if you want the social media clicks, this is really good. So you can build your following for whatever that's worth. Kurt Koch is a master of our hot shot of the day. He's had great hands, great feel, theater for the dramatic. What he was unable to do was to shake hands a winner here. Medvedev, a survivor today. Boy, that is still just tremendous skill that Hubert Hurkacz has. Not easy to have the kind of firepower he has on the serve and the soft hands to go with it. That's really nice to see.
Rublev, same amount of losses and quarters as Djokovic. And Hubie, hot shot of the day.
Yeah. So it's always a bright side.
Here's our semifinals, Gauff-Sabalenka. It is the first women's singles U.S. Open time that they met again at the Australian Open Finals since 2011. And then Yastremska and Zhang, first-time major semifinalists since 2004. Jim, want to get your thoughts on Coco and Arena, the rematch.
Yeah, super excited for this one. I'm actually getting to call it for local television here, Channel 9, with Yelena Dokic and Sam Smith. So I'm pumped. And I'm pumped to see if Sabalenka can keep playing the level she has, because if she does, Coco Gauff's level is going to have to just rise like that to match her. Coco was obviously shaky if you watched her the last match or heard us talk about it. But this is a new day. It's a new time to play, and there's so much on the line. Whoever wins this match will certainly be a big favorite in the finals. So a heck of a lot riding on it, and I'm just going to be fascinated to see, most of all, what Coco's game looks like, because Sabalenka has been so solid and strong and overpowering here. I don't expect, especially in these cooler conditions, for her to have trouble controlling the ball tonight.
It'll be interesting also, the mental battle, because we've talked about it this entire show. The last three majors, Sabalenka has really melted down, starting the French Open semi, starting at Wimbledon semifinal, and then that U.S. Open final to Gauff. So can she keep it together throughout the course of the match? I mean, she knows mentally, and every single point, Gauff is going to say, I'm going to get every single ball back and play that I can. I'm going to keep challenging you to come up with volleys and finishing shots. Does Sabalenka have the wherewithal to hang in there? That's the big question for me.
Yeah, we saw.
Hold on. Hey, Lindsay, can you run that back for a second? I got to take notes for the match tonight. What were those three bullet points?
Call me after.
Sorry, John. Go ahead.
Serve well. I think this is a good matchup for Coco. And we saw at the U.S. Open final, we see their head-to-head. I think she doesn't mind this level of pace. Do note, you know, we say this all the time, you can only beat the players put before you. But this is a real step up for Coco, who hasn't had to play a seed, Lindsay, you say, hasn't had to play a top 20 opponent all year. Yep. So a big challenge playing the player who won this event last year and is playing as well as she has been these last five matches.
Oh, let's talk about the match between the qualifier and the 12 seed. What does it say to you, John, that over the last 4 years, we've had now three qualifiers reach the semifinals at majors?
The margins are thin. There's a lot of parity. I think it's actually a really interesting conversation to be had about why this is so. Obviously, best of three versus best of five changes the sample size. I'm really impressed with Q, though. I mean, the athleticism. Now this is two straight late runs at majors. I think this is one of these matches where she will be desperately disappointed if she doesn't win, and that's always an interesting dynamic to take the court with.
Yeah, we learned a lot about Zhang last fall, right? She had her coach, Wim Fissette, who told her, you know what, I'm going to leave our contract and go back to work with Osaka. She was shattered and very publicly shared all that. She was able to get back a previous coach in Per Riba. That seemed to settle her down, but she's very honest also with her emotions. She was so thrilled to meet Li Na. She is so thrilled to get into the top 10. Only 24 hours to get ready now for the biggest match of her life. Can she settle down and make it just about the tennis out there against Yastremska?
Can we talk about the little match within the match? We're one match away from getting the coach's corner bowl.
Totally.
Brad Gilbert versus Per Riba. That will be fascinating to see that little dynamic play out. They turned around Coco Gauff in a very short period of time together. Per Riba was the first coach hired. Then Gilbert was brought on. Per Riba no longer with them, but with Q, and doing great work with her again. So that's like a little insider tennis trivia there. When's the last time you've had a coaching team that then had to face off against each other for a major title? And I think the answer is probably never.
And in the very next major.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Amazing. Yeah.
It's
amazing.
Incredible. All right, Jim, have fun calling that Coco Gauff match today.
Have fun storming the castle in L.A., team.
All right, for now. We will break it all down for you tomorrow, the women's semifinals. At this point tomorrow, we're going to know who our two finalists are on the women's side, and we'll talk all about the men's semifinals as well. TC Live comes your way at 5 o'clock Eastern on court coverage with Brett and Paul in the morning at 8 a.m. Eastern. For the entire team, thank you so much for joining us on TC Live today.